Hey, y'all, this is Gretchen from Always a Lessons Empowering Educators podcast. I'm a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts, but make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Infused Classroom Podcast, where each episode, Tanya Abrith and Holly Clark take you behind the scenes with leaders in education, give you insights into what's happening in classrooms around the globe, and showcase online platforms that are disrupting education.
Hi, and welcome to the Infused Classroom Podcast. I'm Holly from San Diego.
And I'm Tanya from South Florida.
And today, I have to say, I am so excited because we have one of my favorite educators on the show, Martin Moran from Chicago, and I'm going to let him start tell you about himself and kind of give you a background into why I'm so excited to talk to him today.
Hi, my name is Martin Moran, and I am a high school founder in Chicago who is founding a new high school opening this fall called Bennett Day School. We're a project-based and competency-based school that's been in the works for about 3 years now. And basically, we're trying to do everything we can to mess with the world of education a little bit and bring it into the 21st century as much as we possibly can. So that's where I'm coming from.
So how did you get involved with messing with a school? And I mean, you were at the Parker School there in Chicago, a really, really good school. And then how did you get dragged away from them and get to start this project?
Yeah, so I started in Evanston, Illinois, at Evanston Township High School, where I taught for 6 years, and then moved over to the Francis Parker School, where I was originally a history teacher, and then I did some curriculum work there, and then moved on to become the education technology director there, and then the director of innovation and design at the school. And it was really when I was there, In my roles as ed tech director and then innovation and design, I got a chance to really spend a lot of time looking at other schools and seeing what was out there in terms of what might be, and the administration at Parker was great about giving me the opportunity to go see other places, and as I did, I saw a lot of things happening. I think I saw 150 schools over the course of 10 years or
so.
Yeah, it was a lot. And in seeing it, it was, you got to see these little pockets of amazing things that were happening. And around the same time that I was doing this, a couple of friends of mine decided to go off and start a new school, a grammar school in Chicago. And they were asked me to help out with, at the time, just because I was an ed tech director, they're asking about iPad purchases and things like that. And they just needed someone to help advise. And so I was involved with that for a few years. And then after a while, I started getting the itch to think, you know, if we could pull a number of these things together that people are doing, we could really make something interesting. And it was at the same time that I was kind of thinking also that in order to really make a dent in what's happening in education, you're going to have to kind of start fresh, start from scratch, that it was really hard to make meaningful change within an organization at the rate that I wanted to make it. And it was just around that same time when they came back to me and said, you know, we've been thinking we might want to build a high school to this. We might want to build, instead of just going K-8, we want to actually do a high school. And I said, that's actually great timing because that's exactly what I would like to do is build a high school. And it was sort of just a wonderful serendipitous moment where I basically made the decision to leave a wonderful school that I loved, but to do so just to have an opportunity to start something where I could say, basically, actually, I did say this to them. I said, I'm happy to come over and build it. I'm excited to do that. But my only requirements are that it match exactly what you have in kindergarten, that it looks exactly what it looks like in your kindergarten. And they said, absolutely. We'd love to do that. And they followed up by saying, you know, none of us, you know, have a lot of experience in high school. So basically decide what you think is best and go there. And I said, well, that's enough for me. And it was easy for me to take it from there. I just said, you know, if you're giving me carte blanche to just create the best experience for kids, then that's what I was going to do. And so I've been working on it now for, this is the end of year three.
Wow. You live every educator's dream right now, I feel. At least every progressive educator's dream.
Yeah, it really is. It's one of those things where, you know, it's incredibly hard to leave a great school that you love, but this is one of those once in a lifetime things where you're like, how could I not do this? How could I not build something like this at this time in education history? Like there were just too many things that made it perfect.
It's Daniel Pink's win. You're just in the right place at the right time.
Exactly.
And what have you. But for listeners who don't know, there are two big independent schools, well, three, in Chicago, one being the Latin School of Chicago, Parker, and the Lab School. And there are some others who would like their name thrown in the hat. But I taught at the competitor of where Martin was. And everyone always told me, you are supposed to be at Parker School or at the Parker School. So, when I found out that you were there, I was like, oh, he's at the school I'm supposed to be at. And then you left, and I saw you about a year and a half ago and visited your school and got to do a master class there. And you were, like, putting the blueprint together of this, and you were showing me how you were going to do these competencies. And I'd love you to talk more about how kids are going to learn at your school.
Yeah, it's basically what we did. It's really a I would say a 3-to-4-part day. So the first part, and I will say the part that was most important to me, frankly, was the advisory program that we built. We built a very robust hour-long-a-day advisory program that was that's really built on purpose learning. And so we use Project Wayfinder out of the D School to help guide us in what we're doing. And it's really meant to be that my premise was that every school needs to have it needs to be a place where a kid feels like someone in this building cares about me. And so the advisory system was meant to give space and time for that relationship to happen, for the relationship to evolve between a mentor teacher and a kid. And so, so that becomes the basis, but it's also important, not only from a social emotional and just what education should be standpoint, but also from a logistics standpoint, because the competency-based system that we built is one in which students have a number of competencies across. I think I counted it up the other day. I think it's about 300 competencies over that they need to graduate, and they run across the gamut. They run all in every different subject, and I can explain a little bit into that because it doesn't exactly fit the math, science, history, English concept. It actually is built around our portrait of a graduate. So our portrait of a graduate talks about things like logic and reasoning skills and strategic foresight skills and cultural competence skills. But then what we did is we took the subjects and cross-referenced them against the graduate norms. So in other words, my favorite ones are like, we have one in abstract math, but there's a cultural competence in abstract math that you have to understand to graduate. And so the idea is that what we're trying to do is get kids to not only see across disciplines, but also to recognize the sort of the human made nature of subjects in and of themselves. So they can understand that, you know, yeah, there are elements of logic in mathematics, but there's also elements of logic in writing a paper. And that skill is very similar. So basically a student has levels of those that they go through from foundation to, we call them from foundation level to specialization level, meaning like the basis all the way down to, this is what you do if you do this for a living, type of thing. And students can have a pathway that they choose to go as long as they hit the basic first couple levels of skills, and they can acquire those skills anywhere. Where the thing I really wanted to push was the idea that school is often considered this place where you go to in order to acquire knowledge, and anything that you learn outside these walls doesn't count. And so what we're trying to do is say, well, no, the school should be the place where you go to do two things. One, to get what you know certified, to have someone, an expert, say, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. But also to have that person say, that's really cool. Have you thought of this? And then send you back out to go learn more. And so so the idea behind the school is really built on that idea. So in the school day, we have a very large chunk of our day is PBL based. Is you know, we have 2.5 hours roughly a day of cross-disciplinary PBLs that are really built on the Reggio Emilia concepts, which our lower school is built on. The PBLs are built around the idea of a provocation, you know, so a context-free provocation that then builds questions, and the questions turn into the curriculum, essentially, is the way we built it. So that's a big chunk of our day. So our morning just goes advisory, PBL, and then in our afternoon, we have kind of your more traditional seminars. Like, we would do things like, you know, anything from essential, like, I don't know, you could do a calculus course, but you could also do a course in sociology, or you could do something that's brought up by the kids. The idea of that is to sort of have a little chunk of the day that's just kind of like what all the other kids do in their schools, just so that we get a chance to have that kind of traditional academic setting a little bit. And then we actually have an online component too, where kids can take online courses, about 250 different online courses that they can take through a partner of ours, so that they don't, because we're such a small school, so they don't miss out on the course catalog that they might get at another school. So we took those five parts to build the school. And like I said, in all the schools I visited, I was just kind of like, well, what's the best thing that they do and how can I steal that? And so that's kind of what we did, is tried to pull the best things from all the schools that I've been to over the last nine years, and said, well, let's just do all those things. And it's been really nice, because, to be honest, when I started this, there were things that I thought, oh, it would be cool if we could do this, but we will never be able to do that. And then 3 years later, all of a sudden it's possible, you know, and it's just kind of amazing. You know, it's kind of amazing how it's come together in that way. And so it's really exciting. I'm kind of at the point right now where I'm just like kind of in awe of the fact that it worked, like that all of these things. And now, I don't know, who knows, knock on wood, you know, we've still got kids to arrive in the fall. But like, in terms of like a setup, and I've been trying to poke holes in it for a year about like, well, what about graduation requirements? What about college? And what about these things that all the people would ask? And I feel like I've gotten good answers for all those things. And, you know, answers that have satisfied our first class of parents and kids. So I'm pretty happy with that right now.
Oh, I'm kind of curious, like, you mentioned that you visited a lot of different schools. What were some of the schools that inspired you that you had visited for the design of this school?
Yeah, I think the easy one, the obvious one, is down there in San Diego at High Tech High. And we're part of their new school creation fellowship, actually. So I've known Caleb, he's the director now. I've known Caleb for a really long time. They were the first place. I think I visited them in 2010 or 2009, I think, was one of the first schools I visited. Then it was about visiting places like Big Picture, you know, some of the Big Picture schools, and what they do with internships is really interesting. What I liked about, and then thinking about other independent schools like what Mount Vernon and Atlanta does with the, yeah, and there's, and their, and also their innovation center, the whole concept of what they do with their innovation diploma, what they were working on. And it actually kind of inspired me to think about the idea of, instead of creating class, like honors, regular AP, whatever you'd call it, because that seems to be the way in which we quantify challenge. Instead, when I talked to Bo about their innovation diploma, I thought, well, what about doing essentially like majors or focuses, so that instead of necessarily saying I took AP Calc, you can say I was really into engineering, and here are the 10 different competencies I learned in engineering that I can now put on my transcript as an engineering certificate for my, you know, for college. So it was one of those things where schools like that, you know, are things that I'm playing with now are really interesting. And then so places like I said, those two were big. Watershed in Colorado was a good one, because that was one that was they were starting to they were a small school too, and it was kind of, I was interested to see how they used adjunct folks to help supplement courses when they couldn't obviously get a full staff of people because they only had a small number of kids. And they were also, you know, doing really interesting things around design and things like that. Those are some of the initial places that I would say I found, to be honest, like the coasts, especially the West Coast, was where I picked up a lot of things. And you know, Midwest was a little dry, frankly, in terms of, you know, aside from Iowa Big, which I think is an interesting place, what that school is doing there. And then Atlanta was just in general an interesting city. I thought there were three or four schools in Atlanta that I thought, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. So it was just these weird pockets where it was happening. It was like clusters of innovation that I thought were interesting. And Atlanta, Denver, San Diego, San Francisco were probably the big ones that I felt like I saw the most interesting places. Oh, in Boston. With New View.
Yeah, Boston.
New View, yeah.
Innovation begets innovation. So like High Tech High has kind of set the standard for San Diego, and everyone else has to do something as equivalent or you're not going to get kids. And so we've got a pretty innovative county, and it's really cool to be a part of. But so how many kids are in your first class?
So we're going to have about 20 students in our first class. We're intentionally starting small because with all these moving parts, we want to make sure if something needs to change, we can change it tomorrow, as opposed to waiting, you know, a trimester to do it. So our goal is to eventually get to 250 students in the school, in the full school. Ultimately, I want to kind of grow thoughtfully. I want to grow, you know, about 20 to 25 kids a year to get to that point. And maybe when we hit a tipping point and we feel like the model is, you know, ready for scale, we can go a little bit faster. But I honestly would much rather go slower because, frankly, you know, the kids who are in this first class of 20, they've got, you know, the kind of resources that I can only imagine, I could only dream of when I was in school. Like, you know, they've got six or seven different teachers and all these different, all this time spent for, you know, so there's just a ton of things. And I feel like if we grow slow and smart, we can really create a almost like concierge style service for these kids so that we grow, and then at the same time, we're also, you know, able to adjust on the fly, because there's an unknown out there that is going to, you know, mess with our week one week, but we just got to be able to fix it. And I just want to be able to be flexible and agile in that sense.
So as you know, at the High Tech High situation, the unknowns were the parents. The parents were really the people who were the problem. But if you have 20 and they've self-selected sort of to come, I think like you're taking that out of the equation, and that must be kind of nice.
I had this moment about 3 weeks ago where, like, when you're doing this work, especially when you're an educator and you spend a lot of time in school and you're kind of like, you're like underwater all the time. You're always like, I live and breathe education. So I rarely think about how what I'm saying sounds insane to someone who went to a traditional school, right? And so I had, you know, and I don't blame them for their initial thought being like, really, is this going to work? Because if all I knew was my own high school experience, of course I'm going to feel that way. But I had this moment about 3 weeks ago. We had our first class of students, and we had a really high ratio in terms of our application process. We had a really high ratio of students we accepted to students who decided to enroll, which I think is partially because like they knew why they were coming. There was something about it that they wanted. But I had this like moment where I was like, I can't believe people entrusted me with their kids. Like you know, and it's not that I felt at all, you know, it's not that I felt not confident about what we're doing. But you have that moment of like, wow, this is awe inspiring. Yeah, it is really. It blows you away that people are willing to trust you with their children, and so I had to like step back for a moment and be like, this is incredible. Like the fact that they were willing to take this, you know, to buy into what we're building and to see the vision that we have, when it was literally just me and one other person in a room with a slideshow or, you know, with a Google slideshow talking about what we believe the school to be. And so there, you know, we were in the middle of building our building. So they couldn't walk through and meet kids or anything like that. And so it was, I'm actually really excited about the families that we have in our first class, because all of them, I think, came to us or are coming to us with the idea that, like, I was very careful in saying, you know, this is who we are and this is who we are not. And I think and when the families decided to send their kids here, they were very much buying into this is what we're doing. And Now, we'll see, you know, in a year or two when, you know, when any, when something comes up, you know, I'm sure we'll always have a little bit of that pushback because it does feel a little different, I'm sure, than what people are used to. But I'm actually really excited because I think the families are just so, they all were looking for something for their kid that they didn't see out there. And I think the, I think that was really what was appealing to them. So.
Are there certain criteria that you're looking for students who are applying?
Yes. I can start with, before I'd say what we are accepting, I will say the one thing that we did not and told, and were very adamant about is that we would not accept any test score that they gave to us. I said that if they sent us a test score, they would remain in the envelope and never be looked at. That was a very, like, I felt like that was a very strong message we were trying to send to the parents that, like, this is who we are. We don't care, like, how good you do on tests is not who you are, because our job is not to take the kid who gets in the 90th percentile and make them the 91st percentile. Our kid is to take the kid who is whatever they are and try to, you know, the kid is a variable. They are X. And our job is to get them to X times five by the time they walk away. Right. And so,
oh, that's so awesome.
that was a big thing. And that was, you know, we also felt like if we were going to be the school who tried to be, you know, truly progressive, and then all of a sudden we're like, well, if you score over this score, then you can come in, like, that it would have been so hypocritical of us to say that. So we bounced that out, and actually we broke down our application process into, I think it's five parts. We have kind of your traditional, like, written application, like anybody else would do. And then we asked for recommendations and things like that. But our recommendations were very much about, we asked the teachers to not fill out recommendations about, like, what their grades are, but it was more about, is this a student who, if you ask them to do something but didn't put a grade on it, how would they react? We asked those types of questions because we wanted to make sure that for some kids, this place would be anxiety inducing, that they aren't getting grades. And so we wanted to make sure that we didn't hurt a kid by coming to us and pulling this away from them. So we did want to talk to them about that, but then, we did a parent interview, a student interview, and then we did two things that I think are pretty cool that are a little different than most schools. One of which was what we called a piece of creative work, which we asked them to do either one page or 1 minute of something that shows us who you are. And so for some kids, it was them playing the saxophone. For other kids, it was them doing a painting. For one girl, it was one of my favorites was a girl who had written a whole analysis of the Fibonacci sequence. And I was like, wow, like, for you, math is your creative outlet. And that's so cool. And so, like, just talking to kids about that kind of stuff was great. And then the last thing we did is we had all the kids, all the applicants come in at various times in small groups and do the marshmallow challenge. We wanted to get a sense of how they felt, like, about a process like that. So we actually had them do it. We actually have them do it twice. We have them do it once, and then we have a group discussion, and then I say, okay, now here's another set of the same stuff. Do it again and make it better. And so we wanted to get them used to kind of how school would go for us, and then ask them to reflect on it, and then assessed, you know, how we get a sense of how they worked with others and how they felt about that. So that was really our process. It's a lot different, I think, than your traditional way, but it's frankly a lot more time consuming for the families and the kids and everybody, but I thought it was worth it.
I have two questions. I have, and we can just do one at a time, but I'm interested in the building that you're building, what it's going to look like when you go inside. Will it be like the elementary school? And competencies. So if I'm a ninth grader and I'm coming in, am I picking my competencies and I know I'm working toward that, or how does that look?
Yeah, so the first one on the building, the building right now is, in our first year, we're going to have basically three spaces. We're going to have a kind of general, what I would call like a learning commons or like a library, whatever you want it these days, whatever we're calling it, a version of that will be a space for kids to hang out, but also work in small groups, and then there'll be some quiet rooms off the side of those. Then we'll have a kind of standard classroom space that could be used or not used as a classroom. And then we'll have a makerspace. Those three spots, all the thing about it is all of our, I wanted to make sure all of our walls were movable so that spaces can contract and expand as necessary. So ultimately I didn't use schools as design inspiration. It was spaces like WeWork and 1871 here in Chicago, co-working spaces, as kind of the idea behind it, because I wanted to be able to be really flexible in terms of any being able to create small groups, large groups, medium groups, quiet spaces, loud spaces. I needed it to be like our design driver was really agility. That was really the basis around the space, because I feel like you can't future proof, but you can definitely mess yourself up for the future if you put too many things in place. So that's what we were trying to do, is make sure that we can at least create a space that I hope is as agile as possible. So that was that. As far as the competencies goes, so there are two different types of competencies. There are graduation requirement competencies, which are, like I was talking about, the main subjects run against the portion of a graduate, which are basically things like they go from like reading and writing and speaking and listening and research and applied math and conceptual math and scientific communication and engineering. So some of those things that you would consider to be kind of like the core subjects, but broken out a little bit. And so those are actually something that every student is given at the beginning of each year. So all the ninth graders next year would get the first two levels of all of those, and they would be something that they would just see from the day they got there. Oh, here's where things I have to do this year. So at any point they can submit work that would meet the competency. And so we're actually using a piece of software that helps kids that actually allows kids to see the competency, or see what they call the indicator for the competency, and actually insert a link to work that they believe covers the competency. And then the teacher would give them an assessment back and say, yeah, either yes, you're there, or no, you're not there yet. And so those basic competencies are given to the kids right away. Then in all the different classes, whether the PBLs or the seminars or things like that, teachers have the ability to add subject-specific competencies, which are more like things like things that aren't necessarily skill-based, might be things like understanding, you know, being able to demonstrate how the Constitution connects to civil rights in 2019. So a teacher can add different competencies based on different things that they believe are necessary for their subject. And at the same time, they can then the students can also submit work that way and just drop it in to that same system that we use to be able to track and maintain those.
I would imagine that your schedule must not be very traditional as well.
No, yeah, it's very much not. Yeah. The thing the kids care the most about is we start at 9 a.m., which is the first thing the kids all look at and those of us who are in education know, yeah, adolescents' brains don't work before 9 a.m., really.
They really don't.
No, and so we start at 9 with their advisory every morning. Then we go PBL shortly for the rest of the morning. And then we do the seminars. Each one is a 3-day a week seminar. And then the afternoon is meetings with your advisor, or taking your online course, or maybe going to your travel game because you have to get off campus and you know, get away for that. So the schedule is really malleable, frankly. I think I'm trying to keep it as modular as possible, because I feel like schedules crush schools in terms of being able to make them adaptable to change. Every class you add and every little section you add of 15 minutes here or 30 minutes here just makes it that much harder to do anything. So I try to keep our schedule as modular as possible so that we can adapt it as necessary. Then on, like I said, on Wednesdays, students, we actually have only a half day, because the afternoon is all professional development for teachers. So from 1 to 5 p.m., we do PD for teachers. And so that could be anything from bringing people in to lead PDs to teachers doing general activities around. So I do little like team building and teacher competency building activities. We do things like flash design challenges for project design. So like pick a subject out of a hat and pick a time period out of a hat, and you have to create a 2-week project around pizza. You know, and so the teacher, and so it just, the idea behind it's really around, because our pedagogical model is so different, we really are trying to exercise the muscles in teachers of being reactive to what they're hearing and seeing from kids, as opposed to saying, okay, it's August and I've got my schedule set till December. Because I think a lot of, you know, I would say the majority of teachers in the country are asked to work that way. And
And
I think if you don't work that muscle, it's really hard to not do that, to be able to say, okay, what is it, what does this kid say today? And how do I build 2 weeks of a unit out of that question? So that's kind of the kind of things we like to do during our PD.
Well, I also think, like, being a project-based school, you really do need the time to be able to collaborate with your peers. And that's essential for it to be successful.
Yeah, that's actually one of our – we have a sort of a four-connection rubric for hiring teachers. And one of them is, you know, the ability to connect to colleagues is one of those four. And we want to make sure we build time in. Because, yeah, a lot of – every school says collaboration, right? There isn't a school in the country that doesn't talk about collaboration as being important. But once again, going back to schedule, how do you make time for it? And so if you're going to have collaboration and it's not in your schedule, I mean, that's the TED talk that I give. It's the first thing I say, like, you know, look at the schedule. It'll tell you what they care about. And that's, so we want to make sure that that's built in and that we actually create intentional time to have that space, not just where we're occupying the same space, but we're actually making sure that we're doing things that feed our true north.
How are you finding teachers? I know, like, first of all, if I lived in Chicago, I'd be knocking on your door. So that's got to be hard, because you want to find the teachers who aren't just telling you they're going to do this.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. So it starts really with our job description, and our job description is such that. The first requirement on the job description. Now, a lot of times you'll see schools where the first job description says master's or PhD in education or your subject matter, right? It'll say your degree requirements, or it'll say your certification requirements. Ours says the number one bullet point in our job description is that you must understand that your first job is a student advisor and any expertise you bring in a subject is secondary. And so we weed out a lot of people with that bullet point, frankly. And that's not bad. Like, if there are people who, like, they love math and that's what they want to do, and cool, do it. That just doesn't work with us. And so we wrote a job description with that in mind, thinking about the understanding that this person is first an advisor. So then when we do our hiring process, we actually, you know, we do a mock advising session. I had former students of mine and students from schools of friends of mine come in and basically they had an hour of that candidate's time, and they would pepper them with questions about their lives. So the kid would be like, okay, I come to you and I can't, you know, and then a friend of mine is upsetting me and I got this thing tomorrow. What do you tell me? And you know, the kids' questions are always so good. They're so, like, real. And it was fun, you know, putting those things together. And frankly, I don't care about what the teacher says in terms of the specifics of the answer. It's like, how do they react to that kind of thing? You know, so when a girl comes to you and says, I'm pregnant, as your advisor, what do you say? What in your mind are you saying? You know, what are you thinking when the kid says that? Because as a good advisor, has to go through a mental Rolodex of all the things I want to think about to support this child while also making sure that that everybody feels safe right now, that this is, you know, it's a hard, that part of the job is the part that nobody preps you for. And so I just wanted to make sure that our teachers had the right instincts in those moments. And so so that was a big part of it. And then asking teachers, the funny thing is I don't do any demonstration lessons. That's the one thing I don't care to see. Like, I frankly do not, because ultimately everybody can put, any teacher who's gonna make it into an interview can do a good 45 minutes. So what do I care about that? So I tried to make the hiring process as authentic as possible to what we were. So we do a mock project design where that morning I give the teacher, here's the topic, here are the questions the kids asked. You're going to meet with two of our current teachers and plan a project based on that. And so just, it's one of those things where I know that we're very different, and because of that, I try to make sure that everything we ask our candidates to do is authentic to what they'll be doing in the job, and to realize what the important things are. So so to be honest, it was hard to find good candidates. I think the people we've hired are amazing, and I love them, and I think I'm so excited to be working with them. But it took us a year. I put the positions out almost a year ago. Yeah, a year ago in February, and it took me to, you know, we hired one person in August. We hired another person in November. We hired a third person about 3 weeks ago. And so we took our time with it. I think now that we've got a group, it'll be a little bit easier. And the nice thing is we've got a number of young teachers who are working with us in either apprentice or intern capacities who are already learning this stuff. And I think we'll make great teachers as they go through it. So the funny thing is I have talked to a lot of folks who are like, oh, if I lived in Chicago, I would definitely teach there. And I was like, yeah, you should move here. But I think right now I'm actually pretty happy with where we're at. And we've got some folks, because our model is so modular, like I was saying, I've actually got some folks who are former colleagues of mine who left teaching out of frustration, who are going to come in and teach with us a little bit here and there, but they're still going to do other things, but they're going to come in and teach for a trimester or for two trimesters because our schedule allows them to do it. And they're great teachers who I know personally. And so I'm actually I'm hoping to redefine a little bit of what it means to be a teacher in that kind of that sense of like, you have to do this, this, and this, and you have to have this, this, and this training to do it. I'm trying to rethink, you know, if we could potentially redefine what it means to be a teacher and what qualifications for teaching might be, away from things that are quantified by, do you have a Harvard degree or do you have a master's from you know, Klingenstein or whatever, and you know, whatever school you want to pick, and start looking at people who may not have thought of themselves as teacher. I think we might really be able to find people who are amazing, and frankly, open it up to a lot of people who have been marginalized, because I think a lot of the reason that there are teaching is frankly such a white profession is because of the types of criteria that we look at come from very white institutions. And so I'm not sure if this is all going to work. It's just sort of something I'm thinking about, but ultimately I want to open up the field of teaching to a lot more people who may not have thought of themselves as traditional teachers in the past.
I actually like went on to your website and stalked like your job and I went through them, and I sent them to my current head of school, because I was like, look how thoughtful and intentional they are about how and what they're looking for. You used backwards design and went in and said, okay, after, by a year, by 6 months, by 3 months, like the first 3 months you'll be doing this, and the first 6 months you'll be doing this. And it was clearly so intentional in terms of what you're looking for. Like, you've really spent time thinking about this. And so I think that as a teacher, it's so nice to be able to come into that environment and feel supported. How do you see yourself approaching sort of that mentorship for your teachers throughout this process?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is, you're right, that idea of mentoring teachers is something I'm actually really excited about. And so we have right now an apprentice program where young teachers come in and aren't given the same responsibilities as a full-time teacher, but instead are meant to literally apprentice under that person and get a sense of, well, here's what it's like. So they would be a co-advisor of an advisory group, and they would work. They might teach one project, one PBL, and one seminar in a year, so that instead of being thrown to the wolves, they can dip their toe in it. And they'll do other things for the school that'll help them have a full-time job and things like that. But the idea is that we don't want to, because if you sink or swim, then like all the bad habits you pick up when you're just trying to survive become who you are eventually. And so so the apprentice program is big. We have, like I said, an internship program, which is also meant to be in that same vein. Ultimately, I would love to have My dream is to sort of have something similar to High Tech High, like a graduate program where people can come in and really learn how to do this in a way that helps them get a degree as well. I think in terms of like the specific type of mentorship, I think in the first year, a lot of it is me helping, because we've got teachers who are all very experienced, but this has been living in my head now for 3 years. So I'm doing a lot of help, like, oh yeah, this is what I meant when I wrote this, and this is what I meant when I wrote this. But what we're trying to do is also, because we're a team-based approach, is we've got our two lead teachers this year who are kind of going to lead on projects. But then instead of keeping them together as a team over the next 4 years, they'll split off and have a new person with them. So there'll be two teams with one lead person and one person who's newer. And I kind of have this sort of exponential growth model where then those teams are then split off, so that instead of having like the team of all the people who've only been there for 6 months, we can actually have some nice mentorship roles within the school itself, as far as like the continuity plan for the school.
Very often, you know, we'll have these conversations, these dreams of, you know, doing these kinds of things in our school. And it always comes back to, well, we need to prepare our children for college. We need to get them ready for the SATs. We need, you know, and I'm sure obviously that's a big conversation that you have had multiple times. So how are you going to be addressing that? That the kids still need to take the SATs and prepare for college. So, you know, how do you see this school sort of approaching that question?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, because that's one I obsessed about. And what I did was this. I basically said, you know what, let's just be honest about it. Kids have to take an SAT, and they have to score well on it. And they have to have good college counseling, and they have to and ultimately a lot of folks are going to judge us that way. And so I said that on Wednesdays our teachers are off doing PD. Actually, what we did for the kids during that time is we hired the best test prep company in Chicago who does private lessons for all the other kids who get pulled out, and had them come in, and they teach a whole trimester's worth of SAT prep every year for our kids. So starting in ninth grade, they do it then. We also hired a Manhattan-based college counseling group called Ivywise, who does 5-to-1 counseling, so that our kids actually have a smaller ratio of counselors to kids than any school in the city. And my theory was like. I could, as a progressive educator, fight it and be like, no, we're never going to, you know, like, that's not what you should care about. Or you just say, you know what? It's part of your life. Let's not be Pollyannas. Let's say you have to do this. You have to do well. And it's part of the system. I think the system's stupid, but you have to do it anyway. I'm not changing college. And so let's just get you as prepared as possible for it. And then, but at the same time, we're going to name it. We're going to say, we are putting this in this box. Instead of having it infiltrate everything.
And that's what happens. It infiltrates everything. It's what everything revolves around. It's why at my school we have 7 periods a day, and we don't even speak to other teachers throughout the day, because everything's so module and particular, because, oh, we have to prepare our kids for these tests.
Right. Yeah. Because, I remember when I was teaching, in an independent school, every teacher would say, oh, if we're in a progressive school, if somebody doesn't teach them how to take a test, if I don't teach them how to take a test, then nobody will. But nobody ever talked to each other, so everybody did that. And so you lose your progressive, you know, roots, because all of a sudden every teacher who out of a purely, you know, I think in general a good reason is saying, well, I want to make sure I do this because I don't think it's happening here. Whereas I just decided to basically say, look, we're just gonna say we do it. We do it here and we do it here. And nobody else worry about it. And so, like, all teachers, your job is not to worry about prepping them for SATs or ACTs or college. Your job is to do the best job right now, because we hire people who do this for a living, who can do it better than us, to do that part. And so let's just do that. And so it's just my way of kind of like, just let's just be real about it. Like, it happens. Let's just deal with it in the best way we know how.
I feel it's like sticking it to the man, but like,
yeah. That's kind of my job. Yeah.
Well, I'm coming to visit, so expect like pretty much October next year. No, I'll let you get
out. Yeah, let's mess up a few times before you get here.
And if you ever need some sort of like Holly Clark 2 weeks as a educator on staff for anything,
I might have to. Yeah, might have to. Yeah, might have to give you a call.
Count me in too. I'll come too. I'd love that.
I'd love to. Yeah, we'd love to have you there. I think it would be great. I'm hoping that, you know, we could take, speaking of High Tech High, we can take that kind of attitude of like, our doors are always open, and we mm-hmm. want to be a learning community. So I would love to have folks come in as soon as we, you know, like I said, as soon as we figure out the things that we've made mistakes on and fix them.
I'm kind of curious, like, how are you planning on documenting this journey? Because I'm sure there's going to be so many people who are dying to know what's happening and what that process is like. Do you have any plans for, like, how you will document student learning and how students will document their learning as well?
Yeah, we are portfolio based. So the kids are, as they're filling out those competencies, they're essentially creating a portfolio of their work. We also have because I think one of the other things is that our teachers, we're asking them to do a significantly less number of preps. In parlance of the educator, you know, they're really only teaching at most two times a day. So part of that is done intentionally to make sure that they, like, their job is the advisor, and their job is to make sure that their kids are okay. But the other thing is that we want them to do at least one thing outside of teaching that makes that where their own personal interests and the needs of the school kind of merge. So the idea of, like, if someone's really into, so, you know, one of our teachers has been doing marketing and is really in, and so she's like, she wants to, she really likes the idea of writing blogs and creating social media content and stuff like that. So the idea is great. That's part of that. Then that'll be your responsibility as part of your job. That'll be your duty. And, you know, in the way we think about it in terms of.
I can't wait to see how this all unfolds.
It'll be fantastic because it has Martin at the helm.
But hopefully.
When I like, tell them about it, when I'm like, I went to this Bennett Day School and I saw, and you know, and I got to talk to you guys quite a while back, like I said, I always tell people it's not about the delivery model of instruction at the school. It's about students learning. Yeah. And I don't know if I say it right, but I just feel like it's no longer about how do I teach. It's about how students learn.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I like to say it's the difference between prescription and diagnosis. That teaching is often a prescriptive thing. Here's you have this. I'm giving you this. Versus this is who is this kid and how do I reach them? And so that's really what it boils down to. And that's what good teaching is, as much analysis of a child as it is creating good learning experiences.
So, Tanya, are you putting your house for sale yet?
Oh, my God. I feel like that's the best way to sort of sum up today's conversation, right? Like, it's really about the student, and everything should be centered around their needs and everything we do. Well, I thank you so much, Martin, for your time today. This has been such an awesome conversation, and I am so, so, so happy that you were able to come on the show and share a little bit about what you're doing, and we can't wait to have you back again in 6 or 8 months when you feel a little more settled so we can do a part two and find out sort of, you know, what that journey has been like at the beginning and learn from where you're at in this process.
We have to go in a year and have the kids on the podcast.
Yes.
Yes.
Even better. Yes. Even better. Yes. Have them talk about what their learning is like.
Oh, okay. Well, then stay tuned, people. We'll be having the kids on the podcast someday soon. Or maybe not so soon because they got to start school and get involved. But anyway, well, thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Infused Classroom podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or anywhere you get podcasts. Keep up with the conversation by using the hashtag Infused Classroom on Twitter and Instagram. And make sure to check out infusedclassroom.com. See you next time.